going to talk about the organic matter removal and soil compaction have unexpected results on the subsequent tree growth in an early Douglas fir rotation in the Oregon Cascades. This study was part of the Northwest Advanced Renewables Alliance, which I'll talk about on the next slide, but here you'll here you can see all the some of the collaborators that were involved in other parts of the study. So the Northwest Advanced Renewables Alliance, or NARA, is the name that this group of organizations that applied for this biofuel grant from the USDA, where the overall goal of this was to convert Douglas fir woody biomass to jet fuel. And this grant was a 5-year grant, and it just ended back in August of this year. And we were just this study was just one part of that whole big study. So we're studying organic matter removal. The concern is that when you remove that additional slash for whatever use, whether it's for biofuels or for site preparation or other things, it removes the nutrients that were associated with that material. And the additional, say if you're doing additional equipment passes, that could lead to additional compaction. So the overarching question is, does this slash removal, as I said, for biofuel or other uses, affect future site growth capacity? We're not going to answer that today with this study. We're only a couple of years into it, but that's the goal of the study. And this has implications, of course, for the sustainability of that process, carbon neutrality of timberlands, and other policy issues. So one of the concepts that I like to cover for this is basically that slash acts as mulch. We're all soil scientists, and many of us have gardens, and it's the same kind of idea where if you add slash, it's like adding mulch, and we add mulch to inhibit evaporation, but also during light rainfall events, that mulch can actually absorb the water and prevent it from getting into the mineral soil where the roots might have more access to it. Temperature effects also. Where there it's an insulation effect they might keep it cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter, but is that really what we want it to do? It's unclear if that's positive or negative effects. And other things is, for example, weed control. Some studies that Tim Harrington and others have done in this type of study where slash methylations found that higher slash inhibited weeds. It's not unexpected, same thing we see in our gardens, but that has a broader implications. And then also you kind of have to think of, it gets a little bit tricky to think of that, but when you take away the slash, it basically has the opposite effect of that. So the baseline condition is really with slash, where we don't remove the slash. So I'll try not to make that too confusing. But. This study is part of the Long-Term Soil Productivity Network. There's a network of sites across the U.S. and Canada where we look at biomass removal and compaction in a... Usually it's 3 levels of biomass removal and 3 levels of compaction in a complete factorial. I'm going to talk briefly about one of our studies. It's an older study at Fall River in Washington, and the new study is in Springfield, Oregon. So in my title, I talked about unexpected results that we saw in this new study. So here's a site. Here's a graph from Fall River, which is the old study. It's now in its 17th, 18th growing season. But this is back from year 3 to make it comparable with the other data I'm showing. On the x-axis there is soil moisture, average soil moisture through the late summer. And on the y-axis is just volume tree growth. So what you see is that as there is more moisture, I won't worry about the different treatments, but as you see there's more moisture, the trees grew more. So it seems to be a moisture limitation. So the expectation is here, what's worth pointing out, in Oregon and Washington, we have a pretty substantial summer drought. And at these sites, we see moisture-limited young trees, and that's kind of the expectation that we see in our region. At the new site called the NARA LTSP, that's what we call it, it's east of Springfield, Oregon, and the data I'm showing are for age 2 Douglas fir. And here's kind of an obtuse angle picture, but I'll go through the specific treatments in the next slide. So we had basically five treatments on the site. We had, let's see if I can get the pointer to work.
Nope. Just in the cursor.
Not that. Back. There we go. So anyway, on your right up there is the control, basically the control treatment, the bowl only removal that's not compacted. So we left all the above ground material there, except for the bowl where we removed merchantable bowls. All the stems and tops and damaged non-merchantable trees and everything else stayed on there. The next one would be the bowl-only removal compacted, so that's on the bottom right, where we left all that above-ground material as in the first one, but we actually wind-rowed it up and so that we could compact the soil underneath it, the mineral soil underneath it, and then we put it back, spread it back out. Then we go to a total tree removal, non-compacted, just to the left of that one. And that one has everything above ground. The stumps remain, but everything else above ground was removed of the tree, but the forest floor stayed intact. Above that, on the left, is that same treatment, except for we compacted it. And then we had a really severe treatment where we removed the forest floor completely and compacted that. And that treatment's well beyond what we would do in any operational biomass removal, but the idea is to cover that range of conditions, and that's consistent with LTSP design. So jumping right into the results, looking at tree height at age two, this was similar. Similar kind of trends for diameter, or for caliper anyway, because they don't have breast height diameter yet. What we see is that there is actually a significant difference between the bowl-only removals, so the slash remaining, and then the no forest floor on the far right. Those have different letters and they're statistically different. So we saw that the biggest trees ended up being on the most impacted treatment, which is kind of opposite of what we would expect based on the past treatments in the region where we expected the water to be limiting. So what's causing this? Before I switch to the next slide, there's within the slash, there's actually this kind of strange interaction where that the non-compacted area with slash was lower than the compacted area with slash. But that interaction didn't follow through in the no-slash treatment where we had compaction and non-compaction. So we have kind of a weird interaction. So in each of the plots we have, the soils were instrumented at four depths with soil temperature and moisture probes, and we had air temperature as well, but I'm just going to talk about the soil today. Here's some series of graphs that Adrian Gallo put together. Adrian's talk's going to be this afternoon. He's going to talk more about his study. But this shows the temperature across the different treatments, where the redder temperatures are warmer, and the y-axis is then depth, and the x-axis is time over the 2 years of the growing environment. And what you see is that, just by looking here, you'll see that the forest floor removal was much warmer, even to a substantial depth, to a meter. So that's leading to what we think is the driving factor for the bigger trees. When we look at it a slightly different way, so this is looking at plot by plot differences. So each individual plot and that plot's average tree height after 2 years. You see that there is that trend across, it's more obvious here when you look across the individual plots, but there's this clear trend of temperature effects. And what's unexplained then is that the slash non-compacted one is having effects different than the outside of the temperature effects. You can see across the top is everything else, and then the slash, same temperature as the compacted, same range of temperature as the compacted slash, but much lower tree height anyway. So then the unexpected results here that it wasn't actually moisture. So what I didn't show actually was the moisture results, which show no effect, and we're seeing temperature limited tree growth in these young trees, and this unexplained compaction slash interaction. So that's just one site, though. I didn't want to leave you with just that. So I'm looking at, when we look at across that, because we have this whole network of sites that have been going on since the late 80s even. Getting back to that original question, does slash removal for biofuel, feedstock, or other use affect future site growth capacity? When we look across the network, usually we don't see large effects of the removal of slash or of compaction. The slash removal, when it does have an effect, or like I said, it can be neutral. When it does have an effect, it can be detrimental or it can be beneficial, as we're seeing in this study. And the compaction is the same thing, where compaction, if it's not severe enough to cause problems, can be neutral. If it's severe compaction that limits root growth, then we might expect it to be detrimental. We often see beneficial effects of compaction in, say, low bulk density soil, or where it can decrease the pore size, which increases the water holding into that dry season that we have. So it really depends on which factors are limiting at a site to determine what effects the biomass removal are going to have. Often it's going to be difficult to tell what those conditions are. One of the things I didn't mention about the current study at LTSB site was it was in the southern range of the sites that we have in our region. We picked it especially because we thought it would be a droughtier, warmer site than the others, and we end up finding that the temperature is limiting at that site. So it can be hard to predict what those factors are going to be. But the fact is that I think the factors that we've gone over, the temperature, the moisture, the nutrients, the interactions of those, are what's going to be happening across the sites. And that's it. There's still, so the question is, how much water is available at that site? And there's still plenty of water there. So actually, when you look at the data, you wouldn't think that there is a water limitation there. They seem to have plenty of water. And so from that perspective, I guess then you would be looking for the next thing. But it was surprising that there was not the water limitation. Does that answer, Mr. Askin?
So for moisture versus temperature in this case, is it what you're telling us maybe alluding to is that there's a fundamental disconnect as far as our knowledge base for jungle spur and juvenile growth stage, as far as like the, you know, the theory of the duck fur to pioneer site. I don't understand exactly, you know, do you understand or what's your theory on what the disconnect is between the temperature and the moisture?
I think at this, for whatever reason at this site, it just stayed wetter into the growing season. I don't think it's fundamentally, I mean, we know that trees, if the trees have moisture they're warmer ones to a point are going to grow better. So that's not entirely groundbreaking. What was more interesting was that that there wasn't this moisture limitation early on at this site. And we see that, I didn't emphasize it, but we also have moisture probes and temperature probes in a forested stand nearby. And you could definitely see that in the bigger trees definitely draw down the moisture more than in the harvested area where those tree roots just aren't pulling up the moisture as much. Again, that's not anything groundbreaking, but that's just for comparison.
Okay.